Now I had a clear picture of the part Maddie had seen and told me about. Whatever Joe had done, it had left her almost giddy with relief. She had ventured into the house, for one thing, had dared the spirits to do her business and survived. She had 3 beers to celebrate, and her discretion had slipped. Not that she had behaved with any great stealth on her previous trips down to the TR. Frank remembered her saying, if I found out on my own, that it was meant to be. Que sera, sera. It wasn't the attitude of someone hiding an affair, and I realize now that all her behavior suggested a woman keeping a short-term secret. She would have told me when I finished my stupid book if she had lived. If. You watched the game for a while, then went back to the house along the street. Yes, he said. Did either of you go in? No. By the time we got there, her buzz had worn off, and I trusted her to drive. She was laughing while we were at the softball game, but she wasn't laughing by the time we got back to the house. She looked at it and said, I'm done with her. I'll never go through that door again, Frank. My skin first chilled, then prickled. I asked her what was wrong, what she found out. I knew she was writing something. She told me that much. She told everyone but me, I said, but without much bitterness. I knew who the man in the brown sport coat had been, and any bitterness or anger at Joe, anger at myself, paled before the relief of that. I hadn't realized how much that fellow had been on my mind until now. She must have had her reasons, Frank said. You know that, don't you? But she didn't tell you what they were. All I know is that it started, whatever it was, with her doing research for an article. It was a lark, Joe playing Nancy Drew. I'm pretty sure that at first not telling you was just to keep it a surprise. She read books, but mostly she talked to people, listened to their stories of the old days and teased them into looking for old letters, diaries. She was good at that part of it, I think. Damn good. You don't know any of this? No. I said heavily. Joe hadn't been having an affair, but she could have had one if she'd wanted. She could have had an affair with Tom Selleck and been written up in Inside View, and I would have gone on tapping away at the keys of my power book, blissfully unaware. Whatever she found out, Frank said, I think she just stumbled over it. And you never told me. 4 years, and you never told me any of it. That was the last time I was with her, Frank said. And now he didn't sound apologetic or embarrassed at all. And the last thing she asked of me was that I not tell you we'd been to the lake house. She said she'd tell you everything when she was ready, but then she died. After that, I didn't think it mattered. Mike, she was my sister. She was my sister, and I promised. All right, I understand. And I did, just not enough. What had Joe discovered? That Norman Oster had drowned his infant son under a hand pump? That back around the turn of the century, an animal trap had been left in a place where a young Negro boy would be apt to come along and step into it? That another boy, perhaps the incestuous child of Son and Sarah Tidwell, had been drowned by his mother in the lake? She may be laughing that smoke-broken lunatic laugh as she held him down? You gotta wiggle when you wobble, honey, and hold that young one way down deep. If you need me to apologize, Mike, consider it done. I don't. Frank, do you remember anything else she might have said that night? Anything at all? She said she knew how you found the house. She said what? She said that when it wanted you, it called you. At first, I couldn't reply, because Frank Arlen had completely demolished one of the assumptions I'd made about my married life. One of the biggies, one of those that seems so basic you don't even think about questioning it. Gravity holds you down, light allows you to see, the compass needle points north, stuff like that. This assumption was that Joe was the one who had wanted to buy Sarah Laughs back when we saw the first real money from my writing career, because Joe was the house person in our marriage, just as I was the car person. Joe was the one who had picked our apartments when apartments were all we could afford. Joe who hung a picture here and asked me to put up a shelf there. Joe was the one who had fallen in love with the dairy house and had finally worn down my resistance to the idea that it was too big, too busy, and too broken to take on. Joe had been the nest builder. She said that when it wanted you, it called you. And it was probably true. No, I could do better than that if I was willing to set aside the lazy thinking and selective remembering. It was certainly true. I was the one who had first broached the idea of a getaway place in western Maine. I was the one who collected stacks of real estate brochures and hauled them home. I'd started buying regional magazines like Down East and always began at the back where the real estate ads were. It was I who had first seen a picture of Sarah Laughs in a glossy real estate handout called Maine Retreats, and it was I who had made the call first to the realtor named in the ad, and then to Marie Hingerman after badgering Marie's name out of the realtor. Joanna had also been charmed with Sarah Laughs. I think anyone would have been charmed by it, seeing it for the first time in autumn sunshine with the trees blazing all around it and drifts of colored leaves blowing up the street. But it was I who had actively sought the place out. Except that was more lazy thinking and selective remembering, wasn't it? Sarah had sought me out. Then how could I not know it until now? And how was I led here in the first place, full of unknowing, happy ignorance? The answer to both questions was the same. It was also the answer to the question of how Joe could have discovered something distressing about the house, the lake, maybe the whole TR, and then gotten away with not telling me. I'd been gone, that's all. I'd been zoning, tranced out, writing one of my stupid little books. I'd been hypnotized by the fantasies going on in my head, and a hypnotized man is easy to lead. Mike, are you still there? I'm here, Frank, but I'll be goddamned if I know what could have scared her so. She mentioned one other name I remember, Royce Merrill. She said he was the one who remembered the most because he was so old. And she said, I don't want Mike to talk to him. I'm afraid that old man might let the cat out of the bag and tell him more than he should know. Any idea what she meant? Well, it's been suggested that a splinter from the old family tree wound up here, but my mother's people are from Memphis. The Noonans are from Maine, but not from this part. Yet I no longer entirely believe this. Mike, you sound almost sick. I'm okay. Better than I was, actually. And you understand why I didn't tell you any of this until now? I mean, if I'd known the ideas you were getting, if I'd had any idea... I think I understand. The ideas didn't belong in my head to begin with, but once that shit starts to creep in... When I got back to Sanford that night and it was over, I guess I thought it was just more of Joe's, oh fuck, there's a shadow on the moon, nobody go out until tomorrow. She was always the superstitious one, you know, knocking on wood, tossing a pinch of salt over her shoulder if she spilled some, those four-leaf clover earrings she used to have, or the way she wouldn't wear a pullover if she put it on backwards by mistake, I said. She claimed doing that would turn around your whole day. Well, doesn't it? Frank asked, and I could hear a little smile in his voice. All at once I remembered Joe completely, right down to the small gold flecks in her left eye, and wanted nobody else. Nobody else would do. She thought there was something bad about the house, Frank said. That much I do know. I drew a piece of paper to me and jotted Kaya on it. Yes, and by then she may have suspected she was pregnant. She might have been afraid of influences. There were influences here, all right. You think she got most of this from Royce Merrill? No, that was just a name she mentioned. She probably talked to dozens of people. Do you know a guy named Closter? Gloucester? Something like that? Oster, I said. Below Kaya, my pencil was making a series of fat loops that might have been cursive letter L's or hair ribbons. Kenny Oster, was that it? It sounds right. In any case, you know how she was once she really got going on a thing. Like a terrier after rats. Yes, like a terrier after rats. Mike, should I come up there? No. Now I was sure. Not Harold Oblowski, not Frank either. There was a process going on here, something as delicate and as organic as rising bread in a warm room. Frank might interrupt that process, or be hurt by it. No, I just wanted to get it cleared up. Besides, I'm writing. It's hard for me to have people around when I'm writing. Will you call if I can help? You bet, I said. I hung up the telephone, thumbed through the book, and found a listing for R. Merrill on the Deep Bay Road. I called the number, listened to it ring a dozen times, then hung up. No newfangled answering machine for Royce. I wondered idly where he was. 95 seemed a little too old to go dancing at the country barn in Harrison, especially on a close night like this one. I looked at the paper with Kaya written on it. Below the fat L-shapes, I wrote Kyra, and remembered how, the first time I'd heard Kai say her name, I'd thought it was Kaya she was saying. Below Kyra, I wrote Quito, hesitated, then wrote Carla. I put these names in a box. Beside them, I jotted Joanna, Bridget, and Jared, the Frigivator people, folks who wanted me to go down 19 and go down 92. Go down, Moses, you bound for the promised land, I told the empty house. I looked around, just me and Bunter and the waggy clock, except it wasn't. When it wanted you, it called you. I got up to get another beer. The fruits and vegetables were in a circle again. In the middle, the letters now spelled LYESTILLE. Lie still. As on some old tombstones, God grant she lie still. I looked at these letters for a long time. Then I remembered the IBM was still out on the deck. I brought it in, plonked it on the dining room table, and began to work on my current stupid little book. 15 minutes and I was lost, only faintly aware of thunder someplace over the lake, only faintly aware of Bunter's bell shivering from time to time. When I went back to the fridge an hour or so later for another beer and saw that the words in the circle now said, "Only lie still," I hardly noticed. At that moment, I didn't care if they lay still or danced the Hucklebuck by the light of the silvery moon. John Shackelford had begun to remember his past and the child whose only friend he, John, had been, little neglected Ray Garrity. I wrote until midnight came. By then, the thunder had faded away, but the heat held on, as oppressive as a blanket. I turned off the IBM and went to bed, thinking, so far as I can remember, nothing at all, not even about Maddie, lying in her own bed not so many miles away. The writing had burned off all thoughts of the real world, at least temporarily. I think that, in the end, that's what it's for. Good or bad, it passes the time.